Thank you.
Morning, Chairperson.
Good morning, good morning. Minister, Bunjani, finish.
I know,
thank you so much. Yes, Thank you so much.
Chair, the agenda for the chair.
Oh yes, thank you so much. Mr. Daniels, I will propose that we start with item number 5. Deal with the minutes and the adoption of the third program later.
Sorry for that, Chair. I'm just confirming that we are co-writing at this stage. We have around 8 members. And then secondly, I'm only aware of one apology, and that was with regards to Nkosi Chebukulu last night.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. Let me then declare the meeting open and welcome everyone present. And then say, colleagues, this is the third term of our parliament in this session. So we'll be considering the program and adopting it for the term much later on the day. I propose we swap the items. But before we do that, let me just look at the apologies. Right now we have noted the apology of Nkosi Chebukulu. Is there any other apology, colleagues? Any other apology? All right, it doesn't look like we have any other apology. And then, right, do I get the concurrence, colleagues, if I request to swap the items? That we start with item number 5 and then deal with the in-house later on the day. Agreed?
Thank
you so much. There's interference. Who's our host today? Our IT person?
Our IT person, Anthony Lemon.
Who is our IT person?
It is Sharon Fortein, Chair.
IT person.
Sharon Fortein. Can you hear me, Chair?
Yeah, I can.
And that
Yes, I agree, but a lot of interference, Peter. And can our IC person attend to it and mute people who are not on the platform?
I will be thank you.
Who's that? Is that anyone?
Is it
Sharon
from RTP?
Come again?
Sharon from ICP.
Yes, please, attend to the interference. If you pick up that someone is interfering and is not supposed to be speaking, please just mute the person.
I will do so, sir.
Thank you so much. Colleagues, I've declared the meeting open. I've requested that we swap the items, and there's no objection to that. So we will therefore start with item number 5 as agreed. Let me welcome the minister and the delegation from the department, especially SAMHS, South African Health Military Services. They will introduce themselves at the time. And so I don't know how much time they need to take us through their presentation. I know the presentation is in two parts, all right? There is a first part that deals with the health system. So we want to understand how the SAMHS functions, how it links up with other with the DOD Department of you know with the other arms of services in the department, there are challenges if there are any. We will not deal with the budget today. We'll set aside time to deal with the budget of the entities. We've also invited a presentation on the repairs and maintenance of sick bays and the military hospitals. In other words, the session today is dedicated to that to the health services in the Department of Defense, and I'm tempted to give you 45 minutes. I'll limit you to 45 minutes, the first presentation, and then 45 minutes for the second presentation. So after which we then take the discussion on both presentation. I hope we will find this in order. And the minister will give us her address.
I'm here, Chair.
Yes. The minister will give. Thank you so much, Minister. Welcome again. The minister will give us her introductory remarks, including introducing the new Secretary for Defense to this committee, or whoever will be that she deems it expedient to introduce, and then to include her presentation. Honourable Minister, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Am I audible, Chair?
Yes, you are, Minister. Audible.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, and thank you, Honourable Members. I am here with a team from SAM. I don't know if the Secretary of Defense is there. Madam Ambassador Sondo Kuju, are you there? Okay. Chairperson, I don't have the visibility of the team, unfortunately, but I can see you.
Yes, but is the Secretary for Defense in the meeting?
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Allow me to introduce the General Ndlovu, Dr. Ndlovu, who is the Deputy Chief of the South African Military Health Services, who is leading a team from SAMHS. Unfortunately, the head of SAMHS is not here right now and will not be able to join us today. So Chairperson, the Deputy Minister of Defense and Military Veterans, Honorable Thabang Makgwetha, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, and the Deputy Surgeon General, Major General Noel Ndlovu, we are happy that an opportunity chair has been provided to make a presentation on the South African Military Health Services and the Health System Medium-Term Expenditure Framework and the Repair and Maintenance Program. In the course of the presentation, Chairperson, which will be led by the Deputy Surgeon General, Major General Noel Ndlovu, they will outline the South African Military Health Service's strategic alignment in relation to the rest of the South African National Defence Force, their primary objectives, service delivery challenges, the MTES plan, and proposed way forward. Chairperson and honourable members, it needs to be made visible upfront that the SAMS is at the cutting edge of the delivery of health services to members of the South African National Defence Force and their dependents, serving as retired members as well as bona fide military veterans. In addition to these tests, the provision of health care also extends, as you would know, to the Commander-in-Chief, the Deputy, and members of foreign armed forces on request and against payment. The total patient population is above 176,000 throughout the length and breadth of the country. Chair, I should say that I mentioned there that this also extends to military bona fide military veterans. That's to say that during this COVID-19 period, we had to take a hasty decision of extending beyond that and attend to dependents of military veterans. And you know, Chair, that this is a discussion which has been ongoing within between ourselves and the South African National Defence Force. During the current COVID-19 pandemic, the SAMS has had an additional responsibility to support the National Department of Health in the national fight against the pandemic. The SAMS role has therefore been double-edged, and you will have seen in recent weeks their intervention in the health crisis, just to make specific reference to one province in the Eastern Cape, upon being called upon by the provisional government through the Commander-in-Chief. However, that was in addition to interventions that have already in all provinces in the country. From the beginning, we had decided that the South African Military Health Services will work on the basis of the district model so that it is available to all provinces and districts. Chairperson and honorable members, all these have been against an overall declining budget of the Defence Force. Notwithstanding the South African Military Health Services' primary outcomes, which remain to provide combat-ready forces that are fully supported in military operations and deployments domestically and abroad. Some of the areas that remain of concern is the renovation of health facilities, which I see as the second item. And I want to make reference in particular to one military hospital that has been ongoing for quite some time. This matter I have addressed in previous budget votes, and I expect that there will be continuous updates in this regard. The second is the concern with the high cost of medical supplies. But before I get there, Chair, when we were allocated this money for COVID-19, one of the directives which I gave to the Military Command Council is that of ensuring that we take advantage of availability of a small fraction of that money and renovate and attend to the challenges we have in one name. I took this decision, Chair, after a lot of agonizing, and I said, in view of the fact that we have members of the reserve force who have come forward and availed their skills, I then said, let's take advantage of the skills that have come forward, which are available to us, and utilize them to complete the process of renovation at one mill. And I would expect, therefore, that as the Deputy Surgeon General gives a briefing, that amongst others, he will touch on that. And I want to make specific reference here to the seventh floor, which is the ICU of one mill, which has been worrying me a lot. I know that there is some work now which is being done there. The second is the concern with the high cost of medical supplies and the risk which that poses to the maintenance of appropriate stock levels to ensure quality health care. The third area, Chair, to highlight, which they will address, is the continued need for the recruitment, appointment, and retention of health care professionals. I must say that, Chair, for the, how do I put it in English? When we were confronted with the situation of deployment to the district model, but also of deployment of some of the specialists to some of the areas, particularly when there was this, when the Western Cape, the Eastern Cape was at the peak, you realize then, Chair, that in fact we have inadequate personnel for in the Defence Force, which is supposed to be providing this kind of service. I am sure, Chair, the Deputy Surgeon General, if required to do so, will be able to give you a breakdown of the personnel we have, the numbers of doctors, the numbers of epidemiologists, the numbers of nurses, and other expertise that we have within the South African Military Health Services. Now, this against the background that the South African Military Health Services, having that array of such professionals, as I have referred to, you recall that the mandate of the South African Military Health Services, in spite of the demands which are being made all over for SAMHS to come in and support the Department of Health, but the mandate of the South African Military Health Services is that of ensuring that we have a fit and proper and healthy soldiers. As the last line of the Defence Force, we needed to ensure that our soldiers during this period, even if they do contract the virus, but remain healthy and strong, because they are the last line of the defence of the people of South Africa. Now, I have addressed this matter of getting more personnel for the defense, for the South African Military Health Services to come in and assist. I'm sure there's this third category, which I always forget, which is that of people who have come forward to volunteer their services, who are neither part of the regular force nor members of the reserve force. But they are in there, they are assisting us to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic. Chairperson, it is common knowledge that at some point I appointed a ministerial task team on disability health to establish why is it, because there was a time when we had quite a number of doctors in particular who were leaving the South African Military Health Services. However, what was strange to me is that they were not leaving the South African Military Health Services to go and join the private sector or even to establish their own practices. They were leaving the South African Military Health Services to join another government department, which is the Department of Health. So I put together a team to investigate why this was happening. Why is it that people who are serving government would want to leave and serve another government department? Chair, I guess at some point, if required to do so, the team will be able at some point at a different time to present to you the outcome of the findings of that military health task team. And the military task team consisted of doctors who are well experienced. It was headed by Professor Mukhaliburu Mukhoba. They did a good job. It took them over 6 months to a year to do that work. They went around, interviewed our people in the different hospitals, doctors, nurses, just to get an understanding of why this was happening. And I believe, Chair, that we have addressed maybe 90% of the issues which were raised by the doctors. As a result, we have seen at least some form of stability now, but we need more doctors to join the defense force. Part of that, Chairperson, was the matter of the OSD, because we discovered through that process that we had, whereas the new doctors who are coming into the system do receive OSD as part of the agreement, as part of their package, right from the beginning. But those who had been there in the defense force prior to the period of OSD were in fact not receiving OSD. So this is a matter which we had to correct immediately. But the other matter which we had to deal with, which came out of the report, is the matter of committed overtime, that doctors were not given their committed overtime. Let me not say all of them. There was a portion which was not receiving their committed overtime, which we addressed to a certain extent. But I do learn during this COVID period, as I was interacting with some of the doctors, that there is still some dissatisfaction about how we pay our overtime expenses to the doctors in the Department of Defense. In conclusion, Chair, let us allow, therefore, if you agree, the team to proceed with the presentation and further engagement with the Portfolio Committee. I do want to make a plea through you, Deputy Sergeant General Dr. Ndlovu, Major General Ndlovu, that in making this presentation, amongst others, you will talk to the issue of some of the challenges which we have within SEMS and how you are addressing those challenges. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to you, honorable members.
Thank you very much, Minister, for this comprehensive input. You've set the right tone for the meeting. I think you have painted a good picture, the context in which that we must have in mind when that's the presentation. Thank you very much, Minister, once again for this. Let me now allow the Deputy Secretary General through the presentation. But first, please introduce the team, especially those that would be accompanying you in the presentation, would assist you in the presentation. Thank you so much, Dr. Andrew.
Minister of Defense and Military Veterans, the Deputy Minister, members of the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans.
So sorry, Dr. Ndlovu. My apologies. Welcome, DM. I'm sorry to have not acknowledged your presence. DM?
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you.
Honorable
members, thank you.
Thanks. Dr. Ndlovu, thank you. My apologies. Over to you.
Thank you very much. Firstly, I'd like to apologize on behalf of the Surgeon General. He's a little bit so he couldn't be with us today. I have two additional people that will present us for the host for the presentation. That is Mr. Anton Bukisani, who is our SEMS budget manager, and Mr. Mososo, who is our acting director, military health plan. You see the presentation there? I don't see the presentation, so I'm not sure what's happening.
Who was going to flight it? Was it going to be flighted from our side? Peter Daniels?
Yes, that's what we were told, that it's going to be flighted from your side.
I see. Peter?
Chair, I'm onto it.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. Peter, do this. I can see you have done it, but you just, there you are. Just open it, make it put on what you call slide. Peter?
Yes, sir?
Are you attending to this? I'm saying I can see the presentation.
Is that better, Chair?
Yes, no, but make it one slide at a time. I don't want to see the slides on the side.
Try to get it, Chair.
Are you winning?
I'm busy with the
Is that better, Chair? No, it's not up as yet. We're still back to square one. You see, I want you to enlarge the slide. You can only do it if you eliminate the slides, the other slides on the side. So that you take one slide at a go.
Sorry, I've got a challenge here, Chair.
Chair,
Can we try and load it from this side?
Please do. Can you do that if you can?
Okay. We'll try that then.
All right. Let me just take it open.
Okay. Is that the last one?
Yeah. Question for me.
May we continue, sir?
Yes,
I can you see it, honourable members? I don't see it on this side.
Nothing. We see nothing.
You also see nothing.
There it is.
Yes, Minister. Yes, there is. Okay, over to Dr. Jovu.
Thank you very much, sir. Next slide. The assumptions and the constraints, one of the constraints that we have with regard to the presentation is with regard to the repair and maintenance program, because the law division in the SND has the process owner of the whole repair and maintenance program. But we have information that we can share as far as that element is concerned. It will not be in as much detail as we would have liked it to be. Next slide. It's our belief that we are just updating the portfolio committee. The portfolio committee is quite familiar with most aspects of the fence. The portfolio committee also has in its position our plans with regard to the fence. So we're going to touch with regard to the military health scheme. We're first going to orientate and indicate our strategic alignment, highlight our challenges and what we intend to do, and the challenges with regard to the service delivery improvement programs. And more, get into more details in terms of the plan, divert a little bit and talk about what have we learned from the COVID-19 activities that we undertook. And then we go to question. In summary is the term, instead of two separate presentations, we are going to do one presentation that will touch on the RAMP project. Now, the Surgeon General is assisted in his responsibilities in terms of the military health services through five formations. The frontline formations are the area military health formations, which is responsible for all the military-based hospitals, including 83 fixed base. The tertiary military health formation is responsible for the three hospitals and four institutions. That is the Institute of Aviation Medicine, the Institute of Maritime Medicine, the Military Veterinary Institute, and the Military Psychology Institute. The mobile military health formation is our sharp end and is characterized by two regular force medical battalion groups, that is 8 medical battalion and 7 medical battalion and 3 reserve force battalions. Now, our fundamental capabilities are supported by the support formation and the training formation. Next slide. The picture on our left indicates the distribution of South African Defence National Defence Force military bases nationally, and that also indicates the distribution of the SPAM facilities. Because prior to 1994, SEND was designed to be only located within military bases in terms of the area military health formation. That is excluding the three hospitals and the four institutes. Our total patient population comes to 176,000, and the biggest chunk of that is the regular force, followed by the retired members who belong to the regular force medical continuation fund. We have 17,000 veterans. Now, if you look at the provincial distribution of patients, you find that the biggest number is in Gauteng. But that picture gives a very skewed picture, because in our records, when we record the location of a patient, we record the location of a patient associated with the unit where the member was. So you might find that out of the 64,000 that are purportedly in Gauteng, somebody who comes from the Eastern Cape will be recorded together with his or her dependent in one military hospital, for example, whereas the dependent might be in the Eastern Cape. We specifically put this slide on to highlight the fact that one of the biggest weaknesses of our health informatics system is that it gets very difficult to know the correct distribution of patients nationally, which makes it much more difficult to plan for healthcare services. Next slide. In terms of our strategic alignment, we are still directed by our vision of a healthy military community. And our mission is to enforce health protection, is to make sure that deploying soldiers, the fighting force is protected at all times. But that is based on a second, much more important force health sustainment. The fundamental principle of force health sustainment, if a soldier is out there, they are safe. For the soldier to perform as effectively and as required, the soldier must always be sure that back home, his or her wife or other dependents are not in danger. In light of that, if they come across a health problem, they'll be taken care of. This is the fundamental issue that makes sure that for us to get the best out of soldiers, we must not only look after their physical health, we must also look at their psychological health. That is, we look at the totality of the soldier. And that totality goes much beyond the individual soldier in or herself. So it's for that purpose that we, although our main mission is to provide prepared and supported forces, the second responsibility of first force health sustainment is very critical for us. In order to do all that, our outputs are 5 medical battalion groups, 1 specialist medical battalion, and a multidisciplinary military health service. The multidisciplinary military is the underlying force that supports both the battalions and what we do at home, what we normally and colloquially call base-oriented health support. Our outcome. Next slide. Our outcome is the combat ready force, total military force, which in the case of defense has two dimensions. We are not only concerned with defense. In terms of combat readiness, we have to make sure, as I said previously, that our soldiers are in a good psychological and physical state when they go to war. So our combat readiness goes beyond what we do for defense. As far as defense is concerned, we have to make sure that defense personnel are not only in good physical and psychological state, but they are up to the best, they are the best of the best with regard to mental health, which is a little bit different from, not a little bit, which is much more different from what happens in the Department of National Health. Not only do they have to practice medicine as practiced by the Department of Health in terms of their expertise and knowledge, but they also have to apply that knowledge in a military environment under very austere circumstances. That's why we also conceptualize military health as an occupational health, as an occupational medicine discipline. We further go on and say, well, in order for us to attain that combat readiness, we have to concern ourselves with population health improvement. That is the normal thing of combat, of making sure that people don't die. We worry as much as everybody else about the quadruple burden of disease in South Africa. We implement everything that the Department of Health implements in the military. So in addition to the operational side of our activities, what we call operational health support, we worry about the base-oriented health support, which deals mostly with what the Department of Health does. We have also realized that one of our critical weaknesses is a optimal responsiveness to patients' non-medical needs. We might be giving the best medical care. You come in with flu, for example, we treat you well. You come in for an operation, we do the operation, we solve the problem. But the expectations of our patients goes beyond their own health. They want an environment that is conducive. They want a clean environment. They want all the luxuries that they see other people having. And we also realize that in terms of public health, not only in the sense, but also even in the public health service, that is the greatest weakness. When people compare us to the public sector, they are only comparing us in terms of, is there a TV in my room? Do I get good food? Whereas they are not only looking at the question of whether did I get better or not. Do I go there and wait for hours or not? But all that means that it brings a critical aspect, which is that while we are managing this sense, we must make sure that we reduce the capital cost of care. That per capita cost of care doesn't only include the medical side, also the non-medical side, which is the expectation of the patient. So we critically is that we must make sure that we provide an affordable and best quality medical health care service for the resources that we have been given. Next slide. Now we align ourselves with the EA in terms of implementation of the minister's priorities as well as the chief's focus areas. We are busy working on the structural deficiencies of the same, as the minister has highlighted. We have already worked on what needs to be done in terms of getting more personnel, specifically in the front end, in terms of doctors, nurses, and ops medics. We have a facilities maintenance and development plan. I will more or less use that alignment to address the question of the RAM. We have in our plan, we have subdivided it into Capital West, which is more or less a new infrastructure that we have to do. We have a refurbishment requirement, and we also have normal planned maintenance. Now, this is a plan that was submitted to the Law Division. One of the biggest constraints to it is the cost of it. I did a calculation only on the Capital West part of it. We need something like $500 million, and we're looking at in terms of priority of having a facility, building a facility in Polokwane, building a facility in Blas, which is in KZN, Port Elizabeth, Nelspruit, Saldanha and Kimberley. So those are some of the things, but much more details will be given by the law division. We also fully align ourselves and realize that the strategic reserve direction in terms of strategic reserves is a critical component. The minister has also highlighted that our ongoing issue of maintaining medical stock level. We have also realized during this COVID-19 period that there is a national deficit, there's a national problem of us, the nation, not having a humanitarian strategic reserve. In our discussion, in pre-1994, the Defence Force had a responsibility of maintaining this strategic reserve. I've gone through the Disaster Management Act again. It doesn't specify that the Defence Force should have the national strategic reserve. But as a firm, we think we have to lobby and motivate the National Crisis Disaster Center to make sure that this is put in place. The minister has also done the next slide. It's also talked about the question of our challenge in terms of recruitment and appointment and retention of healthcare professionals. We admit right from the beginning that our intention is to tell the truth that there are internal problems in the terms with regard to this whole issue. We haven't been very good in managing our people. But equally important, there are factors that are from outside that make it very difficult for us to retain people, especially healthcare professionals. There is no salary difference, there is no incentive difference between a person in uniform who is a specialist in one military hospital and a person, a civilian working at Galafong Hospital. So the incentive for people to stay in the firms is not there. The only reason that most of us are still in the firms is most probably because we are more patriotic than the people who are in the other environment. This is an area that needs to be looked at. First protection is our primary responsibility in terms of, as I said, in terms of first health protection. In terms of border safeguarding, we are working on an initiative to train OECPs, that is operational emergency care practitioners, paramedics, in the general language. The issue is that if the border safeguarding is going to be implemented by the border guards, especially borderline safeguarding, it means more or less the same principles and practices that are done by the military must be done by the border safeguarding, the border guard. The important thing is you cannot do that without medical support being close to you at all the time. And in our assessment of what the border management authority is planning, there is no specific provision for a medical wing or a medical support to the whole concept. So we started engaging or talking informally to find out what are they trying to do. So the same contribution towards specifically the border safeguarding issue will be in that regard. Next slide. Now, the critical aspect of our service delivery challenges, we admit that in the past decade, there has been a perceived, although not scientifically determined, decline in the quality and responsiveness of the test to the patient's expectations. There is no scientific evidence that this perception is not only with patients. I think even some of the leadership of the South African National Defence Force have the same perception. And we sort of encapsulate the whole situation, looking into challenges, what could be causing the issue, into the fact that the SEMS is facing a challenge of delivering the best quality and highly responsive medical health service within the constraints of the available resources. I want to put an emphasis on the available resources. Pre-1994, the Defence Force had all the resources that they wanted in terms of money, in terms of people. During the times of, we were told, of national conscription, they will have maybe 50-100 doctors that every year goes to one military hospital. That avenue of personnel is not there. Pre-1994, the reserve system was very strict. If you're a member of the reserve force, you have to serve a certain time every, was it 2 years or so, in the military, 1 year. 1 year in the military. Today we don't have such a provision in the national sphere. Now, when people compare the SEMS today and the SEMS then, all those factors are not taken into consideration. So the change in the available resources are not there. The cap in budget also plays a significant role. So the challenge to us as the SEMS is how can we deliver the best quality and highly responsive military health service within the constraints of the available resources. Next. Now this challenge manifests in many ways. We have identified that most probably we have the issue of HR productivity. Second aspect, our operating capital and capital budget and HR budget are way out of line. We spend close to 73% of our budget on HR. We have no money to do other things that we need to do. There's an escalation of medical legal claims. Patients are not satisfied with our facilities. Patients complain about our service delivery standards. And we have this inherent fear and understanding that we are not doing much in terms of population health improvement. We are not sure whether we are maintaining the health of the military community. And we have identified, we sat down and analyzed the situation and identified the sources of our challenge as the first in a healthcare delivery model. The imbalance in HR, as I mentioned, the distribution of our healthcare facilities. We are not extremely good in the supply chain management and in adequate monitoring systems and tools. Knowledge management, I'll give more details as to what we mean by that, and also budgetary constraints. So I'm going to try and bundle each of those issues in the next few slides. Next. One of the critical aspects that is coming through is the SEMS is structured to be a funder and a provider of health services. We get budget, we're supposed to have divided and then Dinifanya Healthcare Service. This was good and well when the service had all the people that it needed, when it had all the money that it needed, because it could provide more or less everything that was required. Now the problem is that with issues of personnel, with issues of facilities, with issues of so many issues and the expansion of the patient population, you find that we are unable to provide all services. Therefore, we are forced to outsource, to send patients outside. Now, when you come to outsourcing, you have to ask yourself that, is it necessary for the service to provide a comprehensive health service? And what do we mean by that? Because a comprehensive service means everything that a person wants, the person must get. It makes sense when you talk about soldiers. But the biggest part of the same patient population is not only active soldiers. It's dependents, veterans, and the VPA members. Now, it doesn't make sense for someone who needs a circumcision in Calabo. We don't have a hospital in Calabo. For the person to come to one military hospital to have a circumcision, it's inconvenient for the patient and it's just misuse of resources. Then you are forced to say, this person must go to the nearest facility. But the firm doesn't have the structure to control that process. Unlike medical aid. Medical aid don't own a hospital, but all they do is that they provide the funds, they buy services. So we think one of the things that we need to do is develop the capacity within the firm to manage this process of outsourcing as medical aid do. In that way, then we'll be able to define the comprehensiveness of the services that we are providing. We'll be able to say, this is the service that we are going to offer in the hospital. This is the service that we are not even going to provide the capability to offer it. We are going to outsource it right from the beginning. For example, is it necessary for the science to have a cardiothoracic surgeon in one military hospital to do a heart transplant? Because as we are talking now, the science is supposed to have that capability in one military hospital. How many heart transplants do we do? But once a patient comes and needs a heart transplant, and we need to send a patient out, we don't have a mechanism to make sure that when we send a patient either to the public service or to the private service provider, we control the process. So that's the problem. Those are the main issues that move the healthcare delivery model. The other issue of importance is the question of the operational side of the stand versus the base-oriented of health support. Much of the resources that the SAMS uses are actually used to provide services at home in such a way that the soldiers are not getting the best as they're supposed to be. And one of the critical aspects is that we have to realize that according to the regulation, in terms of the deferment of expenses, the general regulation, chapter 15 of the Defense Act, it says that the South African medical health service must at all times be structured and funded at state cost to provide an all-inclusive multidisciplinary health capability to the SNDF and its members. Provided that the cost of services to serving members shall be the liability of the state. These are two issues. The question becomes, is the service funded for only serving members? Because serving members are people in uniform, the soldiers who go out to Eastern Cape and other areas, not dependents, not veterans, and not nobody else. And it's also deals with the issue of the all-inclusive multidisciplinary health capability. We can still provide the all-inclusive multidisciplinary health capability, provided we separate the provision of some services and the funding of some services. Some services we must catch it right from the beginning. Let's move on. The graph, the figure in the graph indicates the distribution of healthcare of the STEMS workforce. You realize that the green part is healthcare professionals, people who are in the front line in terms of them being doctors, nurses, or ACPs. They form only about 21% of the workforce of the sector. Now, the rest are people who are supporting, in the first place, on the medical side, what we call the healthcare ancillary professionals, radiographers, and all those type of people. The people who depend on the frontline people to do something before they can do their work. And the support personnel. We are not sure if that is how the correct proportions are supposed to be, because there's no national or international standard. The normal standard we talk about, you must have one doctor per 10,000 patients. It doesn't say how many other people must support that doctor. In the military environment, we say that for one soldier with a gun up front, you need three people to support that person. But that cannot be applied in a health environment. So we end up with where we are still trying to figure out what the correct proportion is. This is where that we need to be. Let's continue. The second part is the distribution of our health facilities, as I have already alluded to. Now, this is a picture that we got from the VPA fund. It indicates the military hospitals in terms of the yellow, which is Cape Town, Bloemfontein, and Pretoria. The pink indicates military facilities. The black are the VPA members and their dependents. This is only one section or segment of our population, the patient population. As you can see, that distribution is not aligned to where our patients are. If you were to put military veterans and also to put regular force members, you see the picture becomes worse. Now, this comes from pre-1994, and we haven't done much post-1994. Post-1994, we haven't developed new facilities that are not linked to military bases. Post-1994, we haven't done anything in terms of developing facilities outside these areas that are not in urban areas. Because even if you look at the distribution, we find that most of the facilities that we have are in urban areas. This is a challenge, because it becomes a challenge. A child who is very far from these areas, let's move to the next slide, is disadvantaged in two ways. In terms of affordability, because it takes that person it's a long distance for that person to access service facilities. Some of the places the distances are so unreasonable that it becomes impossible. A child or a dependent who is entitled to service facilities end up using other people. Facilities like national health or the private sector. On our side, as I say, in terms of our forgivability, in order to sort of mitigate this issue, we sort of contract or outsource health services to those people. But as I said previously, we don't have a mechanism to control that outsourcing. Critically for us is the question of quality. When our patients access facilities in urban areas, they tend to have better facilities than people who access facilities in rural areas. We are talking about nonsense issues. For somebody who is, let's say for example, in Kavalagan, in the northwest, for that person to access a hospital, it means the person must move from Kavalagan in the night to one military hospital. The person is unlikely to do that and will end up most probably in Brest Hospital or in Karampo. Whereas me, who stays in Tabatuan, I have easy access to one military hospital. In one military hospital, we are responsible for the quality of care and we have to account for it. In the other hospitals, we are not. A classic example was when I was at a joint op and we went to Kimberley, only to find that the soldiers that are part of Corona, when they need hospitalization, they go to the public hospital, and when we arrive there, you find soldiers lying in stretchers, in uniform, in the tube, which is, to us as soldiers, is very unacceptable. Just in terms of the supply chain management, we put this picture just to indicate that the supply chain for health is much more complicated than the ordinary supply chain. And this is the model that we use to try and improve on our supply chain. Critically, we start from the basis that the functions of a military health system, that is our responsibility as the stewards of this military health system, is to mobilize the resources, is to make sure that finances are generated and create the environment for healthcare services delivery. But our objective, as I said previously, is to ensure that we are responsive to patients' non-medical expectations, to ensure fair access to healthcare services. We bring, to repeat myself, the question of people in rural areas, far from health facilities, and people in urban areas. All this come together and ensure a healthy medical community. Now, next slide. Now, we, as evidence that we have been managing the system quite efficiently, we regularly have stockouts of medicines, medical equipment not functioning, buyouts of things that we don't have, and one of the things that is there is that we are unable to do demand management. The question, the issue of comprehensive healthcare services means a person can come today and say, I have flu, you give the person a medication. 2 days later, the person comes and says, no, I'm not well. Whereas in the private sector, instead of the person getting additional medication, they'll say, hold on, let's do something else. In addition to that, patients confuses that what they want from what they need. Because those are two different things. Both of them are medical. What you need is what is scientifically and medically determined is your problem and your requirement. When you go to an optometrist and want spectacles that cost 40,000, that is not a need, that is a want. We also see our level of demand management in terms of and a suboptimal functioning log system, where in Cape Town you have something, but in Pretoria you have to go and buy out because you don't have it, and in Cape Town it's overstocked. We overservice our patients, and the long queues indicate an issue of how we manage the demand. Part of the issues of logistics and procurement have been are well known, so I'm not going to get into that. Next. Another challenge is our knowledge management. We generate knowledge on a daily basis. I'm not sure if we organize it properly, but the organizational knowledge gets lost when people either leave or they retire. Let's move on. This suboptimal knowledge management is characterized by the fact that the issue of standardization, where you find that at a hospital, we do different things. In one hospital, the three hospitals are doing different things. And you think if we manage, we standardize healthcare delivery throughout the whole set, we could be able to be more efficient. One critical issue is a plan gets put in place, somebody goes, and then when another person comes in, another plan is drafted. Not only an issue of the firms, it's an issue throughout our whole organization. And the thing that is that the knowledge doesn't get passed from one individual to the next. Succession is not being appropriately. Critically is that there's minimal we are doing. What we're not doing effective research, let me not call minimum effective research, because we don't see anything our gaps in terms of knowledge. Where are the things that we need to improve on? Let's move on. Now, on the question of monitoring and evaluation, we have to realize one thing, that the system that we are using, like our health informatics system, was designed pre-1994. And one of this thing is that although at the beginning it was one of the most advanced systems in terms of a patient could come to one minute, something get done, and get captured, and immediately captured, the information is available in Cape Town. Every institution, it was one of the best systems. But now it has been, it indicates that it's a problem. Because it doesn't allow us to analyze the data. It's not designed to do that. I will give an example of the COVID-19 statistics that are being given. The predictions that are being done in terms of what is going to occur when, we are unable to do that. And that is mostly due to the legacy system that we have. The ideal system will be real-time system, that we are able to capture information as soon as possible, and immediately after that, the information becomes available. And we are able to draw management and healthcare management data from that information. There are projects that are in place to try and resolve this issue, but they are hamstrung by the question of the budget. So, next slide. So those are the areas that we have identified that for us to, in the medium term, to improve on monitoring and evaluation. We must improve on monitoring how we generate human capital. We must improve on the physical and social infrastructure of the firm, the monitoring thereof. We must improve on the development and preservation of firm's finances, material and knowledge. We must be able to monitor the accessibility, availability and quality of our healthcare system and also our non-health interventions. We of course we have to monitor the outcomes of our productivity of our HR and the effectiveness of our supply chain and knowledge management, as well as the security and of our physical and non-physical resources. I will allow our budget manager to take this slide.
Thank you, Deputy Surgeon General, and trust the meeting participants will allow me to piggyback on your greeting protocols observed at the beginning of your presentation. We all are very aware of the budget constraints and particularly how well our South African economy is performing at this time. And so hence not finding additional funding because we anticipate that it won't be around, we needed to go and look in-house as to how we can generate various cost savings and look at the efficacy of a lot of our health programs. In terms of the cost reductions, under the chairpersonship of the Deputy Surgeon General, there is a substantial cost containment work group that is sitting and milling through what we can do and can't do in terms of trying to create these type of things. Small focuses in the medium was, you know, reducing the number of structures, reducing the duplication of administration and management levels, those type of scenarios, how we take primary healthcare services back to our sick base and get it out of our hospitals, because operating in hospitals, primary health, but again, you need healthcare professionals in your sick bay to be able to get certain of your primary healthcare services back to sick bay level, whether that be to getting pregnancies resolved at those levels and those things. So there is a work group on that at the moment. Unfortunately, with COVID-19, that's a little bit on the back burner at this time. The other option was looking at how we can generate certain revenues, particularly looking at some of the collateral utility that the Department of Defense may have that they can put out there and sell. Unfortunately, due to our regression in technologies and capital equipment and capabilities, we really only left with our hyperbaric oxygen therapy, which is part of the scope of practice that we have for our maritime divers and those things, where we can offer that type of treatment. But we do not have a lot of collateral utility that we can put there. In terms of our budgeting framework, yes, we do follow the national agenda and the departmental agenda. The deputy has alluded to that in great length. I think the only challenge that we have in terms of the national agenda is that SAMS forms part of the safety and security cluster and that particular vote, and we don't participate in the national health vote. So we are not funded through that vote or enjoy the priorities that National Health are currently enjoying in terms of creating conditional grants and those type of things. Back to you, Deputy.
To continue, in terms of our framework, our philosophy, we working under the understanding and we want to move from the basis that the fact that our budget gets cut, it means that something that we are doing that is not right. That doesn't only apply to the whole South African National Defense Force. Specifically to the terms is that the deficiency in the budget means that the perception and experience of the sense value to the military community is not up to scratch. Because people tend to invest in what they value. So our view is that in our philosophy for moving forward is that the only way we can get an increase in a budget is to make sure that our value as an institution goes to the Department of Defense as well as to the nation as a whole. Is highlighted. Now, specifically to the issues of what are we going to do in the MTEC. We intend to to introduce managed healthcare. Maybe to describe managed healthcare is as an outcome of it. It will be where we have a part or a section or a structure or a capability within the sense that is going to function as a medical aid. Now, not to collect money from people, but to make sure that when we decide this service we are not going to do within the set, we are going to buy it from somebody else, we have everything in place to make sure that we get the best value for money for that outsourcing. Which means we also have to describe what we mean by comprehensive services. We agree that according to the regulation, we must be all encompassing. But in the implementation of that directive, we are going to make sure that we decide which services are we going to provide in-house. For example, we are not going to develop a capability for the military health service to do a heart transplant. Because if we are focusing on the primary mission of the service, which is operation, we will not be required or in a position to do a heart transplant in the field. But once we get a person back home and the person needs a heart transplant, the whole of South Africa becomes a capability of the service. That is in terms of specifying what you need to do. So some services we are going to insource. We are going to get people to come and do the services in the hospital. Because what we have picked up is that the major cost of outsourcing is not the healthcare professionals, it's actually the hospitals and the theaters and the consumables. So instead of us sending somebody, for example, to go and do a cesarean section outside, because we don't have the specialist to do it, we rather have that specialist either come and use our facilities in the hospitals, like the hospital does, or we ask the person to come and set up in our own environment. Those are some of the ideas that are being circulated in the sense. Secondly, we have to restructure the self-healthcare delivery model. It's not working, it's very expensive. We have to go to a people and patient-centered military health delivery system. And that might entail us cutting off some of the aspects of the self. Next. In order to generate revenue, additional revenue, we are going to identify health gaps either in terms of technology or in terms of national, and then develop those capabilities not only for our utilization, but also for utilization by the public and the private sector. This might require us to modify the rules and the regulations in terms of who can access health services. We need to specialize in mass casualty and disaster management. COVID-19 educated us that irrespective of our posture, at the end of the day, we will be required and are required to have that capability. We are going to resuscitate our aviation and maritime medicine. A point of critical importance is that some few years ago, everybody who was doing evacuation through helicopter or through fixed wings, all those people were trained by the SAS. Nobody could do it without being trained by the SAS. Now that capability is not up to scratch, in such a way that the people outside the SAS are more skilled than us. We need to correct it. So those are some of the things that, as indicated in this slide, that we intend to do. The zoonotic disease management, COVID-19 indicates to us that there is this gap within the health system in our country. We have the veterinary medicine on the one side, we have the human medicine on the one side. And these two are separate entities, but there is a gap in between. COVID-19 was something that moved from the animals to human beings. We intend to develop a capability to focus on that gap so that we get any warning of things that might be moving from the animal into the human being. That means we have to have something, what we call a one-stop center, one health center, that makes sure that we combine the expertise of the vet, the veterinary science, and of course, human medicine to close that gap. I've talked about identifying technology that we are going to use. In terms of technology, sometimes it doesn't make sense for the military health service to have the most expensive or most up-to-date technology, because our patients, we don't have a bigger patient pool compared to national health and the private sector. So even if technology is of the highest quality of what we require, sometimes we're going to acquire it, maintain it, and keep it within us, but make it available to all the private sector and the public sector as a form of generating revenue. Next slide. In terms of asset management, we just want to emphasize that our view of asset management that is going beyond the physical things that are like chairs and everything. Our most important assets are our patient population and our members. And there are programs in place to improve both on the asset management of physical things and human beings. Monitoring and valuation, I think I've given the background in terms of the failure of the system. We are currently working on way of improving, we have identified the shortfalls and what needs to be done. And then so much is going to continue the presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Minister of Defense, Deputy Minister, Honorable the Chair, and Honorable Members of the Petrol Committee, I'm aware of the time constraints which were given to us. I'll be conscious of it, and then I'll touch on those important points. The military health program, its purpose is to provide prepared and supported health capabilities and services for the defense and protection of South Africa, of which it gives us the output of to ensure prepared and supported health capabilities. And this is done by providing or having five medical battalion groups, which include the specialist medical battalion group, which also houses the CBR, that is chemical, biological, and radiological. And a comprehensive multidisciplinary medical health service to a projected population of 302. Now, considering the fact that we are experiencing COVID-19, it also gives us a new lesson in the sense that when we talk of the patient population, our patient population, it means we don't have to look only at military personnel and their families or their dependents. Because when I take, for example, the issue of contact tracing, a soldier is in the family, interacts with the family, and interacts with children who came from school, interacted with the others, the partner who interacted with colleagues as well. So that gives us a new idea as to how to look into the whole thing. And also, the main sub-program is we have six main sub-programs, that is the strategic mobile specialist and area military health service. Coming to the area military health service, we are advantaged, we have the advantage due to the fact that it's provincially decentralized. We have seven entire health units throughout the country, which gives us the opportunity to react on challenges, health challenges that may be experienced. And the military support capability, recently the general support base, the GSD, integrated with the support formation, and they formed the military support capability, and obviously the training. Next slide, please. We have our strategic drivers, which are straightforward. The climate change, we have to look into that. Disease profiling. Now, this is crucial in our environment, as a health fraternity. The risk existing, re-emerging and emerging diseases, we have to look into them and profile them. New response is given, we have to, it's a driver by itself, a non-conventional threat. The external threat, the communicable diseases, now we are experiencing with COVID-19, we are trying to ensure that since all the protocols are given, and then we are trying to guide all our entities to adhere to the regulations. You can go to the next slide. Now, the next slide, this is an internal one. Recruitment and retention of healthcare providers. The minister touched on this in the opening address, of which also the DSG touched on that. One of the reasons that we cannot really retain them, amongst others, is the equipment, the obsolete old equipment that we have. Because we train a person, a healthcare professional, with new equipment, when it comes to our facilities, the equipment is old. That is one of the demoralizing factors. Special equipment, maintenance, infrastructure, information system, health intelligence and epidemiology is crucial to ensure that we do the disease profiling, and which goes hand in hand with research and development. Next slide. The quadruple burden of disease, that is epidemic diseases and all kinds of diseases, we have to ensure that we manage that, to ensure that we realize our vision, that is a healthy military community. The demands within the mandate of defense, however, continue to outstrip the financial, logistical, and human resources. This is one of the most important the risks that we have, which also has a dominant effect on all spheres in our environment, because we need finances or the budget to ensure that all is in place. And over expenditure is expected since we have a limited budget. Next slide. So now to train, we train healthcare practitioners, and we have also those specialized ones, which are in demand throughout, not only in the country, but international. So the remuneration packages compared to our local, we have to look also at inflation rates of different countries, because now sometimes you look at South Africa compared to US or other countries, you find that the inflation rate is not the same. But those specialized skills are demanded international. So the remuneration packages are some of the things that also increase our challenges. The HR budget cut. Now over these past 3 years, financial year, we have to cut our budget. And of which, despite the fact that we deal with life and death issues, which cannot be postponed, that is our disadvantage. Many other things can postpone their functions, but the life and death issues cannot be postponed. And once these budget cuts are effected, they have a serious negative effect on our mandate. The HR budget is also constrained, because look at the percentage that the budget manager will now come in. Only 74% goes to HR. And then we also need to retain this healthcare professionals who provide public value that the OSP is in place. Medical technology, internationally, medical technology is there, but do we also have medical, advanced medical technology in the sense? We can ask ourselves that question. If we acquire that advanced medical technology, we can also attract the youngsters who are coming in as healthcare professionals and sustain them, and retain and sustain the healthcare system. To be ready for the future, now we're looking to the defense review. We have to address the following strategic issues. Acquire and retain healthcare practitioners. Upgrade the reestablishment of military healthcare facilities. Adaptation of non-medical equipment. All these, like I said, our main risk is the financial risk. Boils down to that. And then if we don't ensure that we have this and improve or ensure that our budget is not negative, our budget is not negatively affected by budget cuts, then we will have to look at other means and look at other mitigation to ensure that we continue for our mandate. Conventional rapid deployment of self-sustaining technological is compatible operational military health capability with multi-environmental capability. Now, the fund covers all this. Yes. Sea, land, air, tropics, desert, and urban. Wherever there are issues, where there is a human, you find that the human resource element is there, which is the most important element of any organization. You have to ensure that it's sustained and it's attended to. Right, yes. And then our doctrine for non-conventional operation, we have to develop that. Develop and support that strategy. Because there are a lot of things which are developing, especially in regard to non-conventional operations. We have to adjust to that situation. Training will not be advanced and ensure that we train multi-environmental, multi- and multi-skilled combat ready for. Long-distance health deployable systems. Now looking at our deployment of the forces, planning external deployment internally, we have from the DRC, we have the FMD in Zanda, we have to stretch all this to ensure that there is a link. And then we also have to pre-position healthcare facilities on low evacuation lines, including also the maritime platform, because that is one capability of the metro. Interdepartmental cooperation is there, it's existing. Like now we are ensuring that to contain the issue, the situation of COVID-19, we are mainly collaborating with the Department of Health to stress for interoperability to regional partners. We continue that, especially in the service. Social support system, we do that with the national non-governmental organization. Now, the last bullet says, talks of reversion epidemiological capability is crucial, not only for this situation which you are seeing now, which you are experiencing with COVID-19, but for which existed, existing or emerging diseases and re-emerging diseases that we may experience. It's crucial that we continue to have this capability. Now, I will end up with our performance information. In our plan, we have all this. It is given and is based on a 5-year period. So we have those projected numbers which are within our APTs, whereby they are reduced every 5 years based on the plan. I thank you.
Thank you, Colonel. The next slide, speaking a bit on financials, and Chairperson, I'm rather cognizant that you did not want to delve into the budget, so I just want to provide certain macro insights in terms of the current financials for the SAMs. What is very clear from this particular slide is that we do, in terms of our full cost requirement and actually what we receive as an allocation, have a roughly about a $2 billion deficit that we see.
what is important to understand that even though we have this deficit, what the deputy raised about the SAM's value proposition is important. Because if we cost our services and activities using the prevailing rates within GEMS for such activities or other medical aids, the SAM still offers a value proposition in being far cheaper than having those outsourced or closing the service if that ever had to be a consideration. So yes, we do foresee a value proposition, but in terms of being important that we market that proposition, the deputy is 100% correct. If I can go to the next slide in terms of the macro picture, whether you look at 2021, 2020-21 year, or the next financial year, the picture doesn't change dramatically. We find ourselves paying roughly 3/4 of our allocation towards paying people. Now, from the onset, it's important to mention that people are probably our critical service providers, because not only do we use equipment, but we need healthcare professionals who operate those equipment to be able to render a service. The problem, however, that we find is that in our capital allocation, it's negligible. It's really a few million, which culminates in a 0% when you aggregate it against the SAM's allocation. And it's in that environment where we sit with our largest deficit, where we have no real capital renewal, we don't sit with an infrastructure development budget in terms of upgrading our particular facilities, and so that presents for us a particular challenge. The 25% on goods and services is challenging to say the least, and that's where we look inwards towards all the various cost containments that we can implement to try to do business within budget, but also to stretch the need. The unfortunate part in healthcare delivery is when you are resource constrained, the time that it takes, the waiting period, and access to healthcare and those types of things does become slightly delayed, and again aggravates the perception of our patients in terms of the quality of service and the timeliness of service. Then on the next slide is just in terms of those shortfalls again, but more importantly on this slide is what's the main cost drivers to that shortfall. It's been alluded to by the Minister too, and various speakers, that we are not, in terms of our HR proposition, properly staffed. As the Deputy indicated, we come out of a design system or sick base that had conscription that provided us with doctors in our various sick base and that. And so what we have seen is that not having those levels of healthcare professionals, a lot of our primary healthcare is ending up in our tertiary facilities, such as our hospitals. So that's one of the big cost drivers there. Sadly, medical outsourcing is a reality. We can't chase it away. But as long as we hamstrung in certain HR practitioners not to our avail, and in particular one military hospital where it's engine room, being its diagnostic centers and its ICU and its eye care, there is a high prevalence of outsourcing that obviously comes at a cost. Clearly, the next cost driver for us would be our pharmaceuticals, drugs, medical consumables, and then fuels and rations to run our system. And I hasten to add that those rations are not the water and the meals that we enjoy at meetings, but it's to feed our patients in our hospitals and to feed our various troops in training and living in on our particular facilities. In closing, on the next slide, we recognize that at the moment the model is that we receive as SAMS roughly 10% of the DoD allocation is then earmarked to us as a particular baseline. The challenges that we have within that baseline is that we do see that the cost of healthcare in terms of the inflationary pressures there run at roughly about 9% per annum. And add that to that, the cost of pharmaceuticals and that, we find that on average between the inflation adjustments that Treasury affords us and what we experience, there should be roughly this 9 and this 4% deviation. That, of course, aggravates on our goods and services budget. What's important then to understand, is, and it's topical, is the wage creep and the salary adjustments of civil servants. And we're operating within a restrictive baseline. Whatever you receive as your first liability to pay your people actually takes away from your goods and services budget. And for that reason, that's why we don't sit really with a capital budget. Because we cannot afford not to have medicine on our shelves and the implements to have our doctors operating with. So yes, that comes back again to our capital renewal that is really negligible. And that negligible implies that we cannot invest in medical technologies. And I hasten to add that medical technologies is not only equipment. There is technology in pharmaceuticals, and there is technology in a whole lot of medical supplies. Bandages are not the bandages of old. And those technologies that are incorporated into the various treatment regimes that we use also do hurt us to some extent. That's my swan song, back to the deputy for COVID.
But all of these issues that we have identified were really, really tested, and are being really, really tested now during the battle against the epidemic. So for example, the sense in this period is fighting along three fronts. The first front is the normal one of us going to the DRC and all, and supporting operations, where with regard to the cells, we have, not only do we have to support ordinary soldiers that are deployed, like in, for example, in enforcing the lockdown, we also have, in the other front is that our hospitals were also in attack from the same disease. Why we must generate people to go and deal with the epidemic, we also have to protect our health. And secondly, we also have to deal with supporting the national health. Now, one of the things that we was also stressed was in terms of gym operations, the joint inter-agency multinational operation, that's a whole concept. Because now we find ourselves not only have to exercise and test our comfort in terms of cooperation between ourselves and defense, but between defense and the police and national health and provinces, which actually will give us a lot of lessons to learn. Our supply chain management issue was also tested and still being tested and to increase resilience in terms of this. Furthermore, equipment, as I mentioned in terms of reserves, also realized that most of our equipment are not suitable for this type of operation and we must generate capabilities of this nature. In terms of our own people, we do not take into consideration the SAMs. If you look at the SAMs only has 96 dentists. It has 359 medical officers. It has 3 veterinary surgeons. It has 131 pharmacists. It has 45 medical specialists. It has 1,444 nurses and 36 environmental health officers. So when the national government and the national department of health and the provinces require support from the defense, it is a stretch because especially in times like this one, because what we are doing was also supposed to take care of our own soldiers. So that is it was one of the most important things that we learned. And also in terms of a legacy project, as the minister alluded to, one of the critical issues is that in terms of health, it's very difficult to suddenly come across money and change the health system. It's more or less impossible. Because the capabilities that are there, I mean, if you actually need a doctor, you cannot get a doctor today. But we tried everything that is possible. Like as I'm speaking now, I think we have mobilized more or less 400 or more auxiliary personnel. That is people that are the volunteers, including doctors. For COVID-19. And as far as one military hospital is concerned, the hospital was handed over on Monday for its final preparation for COVID-19. We're also putting a lot of facilities at the sick base to be able to deal with COVID-19. I would say that if part of the Zoom and the Zoom that we are presenting as the terms and what we are telling you, we work on the basis that the responsibility of the portfolio committee is to know exactly what is happening. The responsibility of the portfolio committee is to say, this is what you are doing wrong and this is what you are doing right. And this is what you are supposed to do better. The responsibility is to look at what you are saying for the medium term plan, so that when we come back next year, we can update you and report on what we have exactly said this time. We are not polishing the situation of the SERPs. We take equal responsibility as the leadership of the SERPs for all the problems that are there. Although some of them are legacy problems, some of them are due to external factors, for example, the budget. Because, for example, even if you wanted to increase the footprint of the SERPs, it's impossible. In the current situation where they're supposed to be cutting personnel, where there's budget, you cannot go and open a proper lane, because you don't have the money and don't have the people to do it. So we put our situation on the table. We planted a flag and said, here is the terms. All what we're asking for you to hear our plea and be able to hold us to what we say we are going to do, and provide us the necessary support for us to be able to do what we think should be done. But critically, it's for the portfolio committee to say, there we think you are going right, there you think you are offline. Finally, as the seventh floor is the part of one of that hospital is concerned, that is good that the work has started and is going to be concluded within the next 5 weeks. It might appear that it's late for COVID-19, but we are only in anticipating the second, the third, or even the fourth wave, and we think that person will still be verified. Minister of Defense and Deputy Minister and Honourable Members, that is our plea. I submit.
Thank you very much, PSG, Deputy Secretary, Deputy Surgeon General, for the presentation. Very comprehensive. It's like you were pouring your heart out. I didn't want to cut your presentation, even when I realized that we were going over time I allocated. I felt I should just leave it just like this, let you, give us the information. I think we'll have, in view of time, we'll have to set another day where we invite you back for a discussion. And I still need to process all the information that you have given us. I have a question on almost all the slides that you have presented. But I didn't think it would serve us good if I start to even raise those questions now. Safe to say that we'll have another time where we really engage, where we'll have now enough time to discuss, not for the presentation. Nevertheless, I'll still allow members to ask whatever questions that they may have. But members, you must note that we'll have, I'll try to find another slot with SAMS in this term. We need to deal with this thing while it's still hot. I don't want to let it get cold. Over to honourable members. Thank you very much, Esther. And yes, I need to, Mr. Murray, let me just check if I do get, let me just check. I want to look on the site just to check if members have indicated that they want to speak. No, no, okay, so I'll take them manually. Is Mr. Murray? Mr. Murray, who's next? Is Mr. Mafanya? Mr. Mafanya? And any other? I've only noted two so far. Any other colleagues? All right. Mr. Murray, you are the first to, you're first. Thanks. Over to you.
Chairperson, thank you so much for the opportunity, and Minister and the DM, especially the Minister, for your input, and then from the Deputy Surgeon General and your team. It's really a comprehensive report. Maybe I speak from the benefit of being part of the previous Parliament and that portfolio committee. It's like deja vu. I've heard it before. The only difference now is that it seems like there's a much stronger desperation. It seems like we've gone from bad to worse. It seems like there's a more honesty and the eagerness from the leadership. Typically what we have found from the Air Force chiefs and Navy and the Army, that we are really getting into a big trouble now. So we've heard this before, and I'm actually disappointed that many of the things that we have heard in the previous Parliament have now been raised again. And if it was not identified before, and it seems like, you know, it is deja vu, the only way that we can resolve this is more money, and we know that is impossible. So let me just touch on a few aspects that were raised. Firstly, I want to start with regards to COVID-19. We were, Chairperson, you will recall that we were informed that there were four military field hospitals that would have been erected. Tabatswane, two military hospital, three military hospital, and one in the Bluff. We've never heard of anything that is reported on that. And even now there's been no reports on that. Has that been erected? To what extent was that funded? What is the situation, seeing that it seems like seventh floor in one military hospital has now been been erected as a COVID facility and not the field hospital that was supposed to be erected there. Just on the matter of the what the minister also referred to in terms of retaining specialists. We know that I recall very clearly at a presentation at one military hospital, it was told to us that part of the reason that the specialists are leaving and the doctors are leaving to provincial hospitals is purely because of budget facilities, equipment, bad circumstances, the fact that they are getting bored and basically cannot do their job. So then they would rather go to another provincial hospital where they can provide and apply their medical knowledge. I want to really ask the question to what extent, and it has been referred to, that graduates are employed and doing that, what they've referred to in the past, their Zuma year, their community service year in military hospitals. Because that is an obvious way that it can be done. Leading from that, I must ask the question with regards to the cost of the three military hospitals. It has not been mentioned that seems to be a huge contributing factor, but I know it has been mentioned in the past that the affordability of the three military, of running the three military hospitals and providing all their services is an unaffordable service at this stage. If that is so, we obviously need to know the percentage of the utilization currently in the three military hospitals. How, to what extent are we utilizing that, given the reports of the shortage of funds for staff, for equipment, for capital, etc. If it's a low utilization of those three military hospitals, and Chairperson, you will recall that we went to two military hospitals with a fantastic, which was a fantastic hospital, a fantastic ICU unit, a fantastic VVIP presidential unit, totally underutilized. If that is the situation in all three hospitals, can we really afford keeping these three hospitals as military hospitals? And should we not, and I've raised it in the past, should we not consider of cooperating with the Department of Health, that this becomes Department of Health facilities and under their budget, because clearly we do not get the medical budgets for that. And if I can ask on that specifically, you know, you have mentioned there is a 2 billion rand deficit on this year and the following 2 years. 2 billion rand, and you will recall that in the total Department of Defense deficit is also about a 3 billion rand. So this basically makes up the total deficit of the Department of Defense, if this is what is happening in SAMS. So this becomes totally unaffordable. If I can ask a question with regards to two military hospitals and one military hospital, to what extent is the presidential VVIP unit being utilized at two military hospitals for the president and for the vice deputy president? Similarly, what is the situation at one military hospital? Because if it is similar to what it was in the previous term, it means that that is non-existent. And we know that, if I'm correct, maybe the deputy can correct me, but the Surgeon General is responsible for the treatment of the president and the deputy president. If that is correct, then obviously, you know, how do you take care of our president and the deputy president? We were informed, Chairperson, you will probably also know that our question session on Thursday has been cancelled because the deputy president is not well. To what extent, if the deputy surgeon general can tell us, or the minister, what is the situation and your responsibility with regards to the deputy president's illness? You know, can you brief us on that? Where do you treat him? Is it in a private facility? Is it abroad? Please assist us in that, because we are responsible for the oversight. I must register my concern that the Surgeon General himself is not present today, and I haven't picked up that any really strong reason has been given. Can I ask? We need a comprehensive plan, obviously. We know that we cannot afford the hospitals. How can we improve service at our base, service sick base? Because that is where the servicemen and the uniform members are. And that is where we have to provide them services. We know people cannot travel from Mpumalanga or from Limpopo to one military hospital. That's just totally unachievable. It's not affordable. It's not practical. To what extent can we rather upgrade that facilities and the services and not only rely on the three main areas? Chairperson, I've got so much more to ask, but I mean, given that the shortage of time, I will rather wait for that, because the main thing is about budget and the main focus, Minister, that we require is how can we at least now go and sit and not have a repetition of what we've heard in the past and say, let's be strategically and very critical. What can we afford? What can we not afford? What is of strategic importance? What is not? What is nice to be? It has been said, we do not have the facilities and the resources of pre-94. But we have got the hospitals, the facilities, everything still of pre-94. And the solution being given to us today is basically get back to pre-94 facilities and funding. And we know that is totally impossible. So how can we how can we build this and at least get them to the right track and not have a repetition of a term from a term from a term, the same things. I've heard this before, and there's no solution being given, really strategic solution. Thank you, Chair. Mr. Mafanya, maybe you may just proceed with your questions.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, the Minister. Thank you, Minister. And thank you, DM, Chair, and members. It was quite a report, and we have had impressed by what is, has been said. I've just been discouraged by Mr. Mare to say all things that are... Can you hear me?
Sorry.
Can you hear me, Mr. Kaba?
Yes, my apologies, I was cut out. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear, Chair. Okay. I'm just discouraged by what I've just heard from Mr. Mare, that a lot of things that are said today is just a repeat from the previous administration. Now, because already the minister said that there has been, she's got a report of an investigation that was done by professors. Most probably these are some of the things that the minister might want to share with us. Now, the question of the attraction of our professionals to the public hospitals as a result of salary disparities also, it has got to be taken care of. But also there is also the provision of the imbalance of provision of services among I'm saying about the urban and rural provision of services. That those disparities also has got to be addressed. Where my proposal is, where the minister might have to look into the establishment of satellite hospitals in rural areas. But also, I need to find out is that what is the cost saving when we outsource where we have to go back to the issue of insourcing, because insourcing also is the way to go, whereby we will have a cost saving measures, including having our own professionals being capacitated. So because of this chair having said that there will be a follow up to this meeting where we are going to engage once again, then I would like to leave it at there, because I've got a host of questions as well, whereby 73% of our resources is spent on HR, meaning only 27% is spent on service delivery. Now, the reality of the matter is that once these issues are addressed in the manner where we get the report from the minister about what they have found out in their investigations, including all that has been said here, and what will be the ways of not repeating the same mistakes of the past, whereby we see it and deliberate of issues that are not attended to. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, are there any other hands that I might not have seen?
Chair?
Minister?
No.
Mm.
Yeah, it's me.
Yes, yes. If you, okay, it's fine. You may come. You may make your input.
So you can hear me, Chair?
Yes, I can hear you.
Thank you, Chair. I want to thank them for the presentation, because it's informative and new for me. I also want to thank them for services under severe circumstances and lots of pressure. is also worth acknowledging the assistance to dependents of military veterans during COVID-19. Chair, also I want to acknowledge the establishment for military health task team to establish why doctors leave SAMHS for Department of Health. And it will be very good to see the report of the task team and the impact of the issues that they already address, but also how are they planning to address the long-term issues to keep healthcare practitioners. Then, share with reference to one of the outcomes of population health improvement, what programs do they have in place and how did they develop those programs and what is the impact of those programs specifically on the encouraging of healthy behavior. Then, Chair, I'm trying to understand the statement that SAMHS cannot ensure that patients get the best quality health care if he does not have access to these facilities. I, however, understand the issue about the situations in different areas, and Dr. Nglovo also explained the issue with the services. What I want to hear is that they strive to give quality health care services to all their members. What interaction do they have with facilities where they are with their members? What the situation is in those rural areas? Secondly, Chair, do they embark on a research to establish on what are the issues in specific challenges in specific areas? And can they, for example, Honorable Mafanya speak about the satellite hospitals. So can they, for example, expand services to those areas, like, for example, twice a year to that satellite hospitals? Say my last one is, they point out that the challenges to recruit, appoint and retain healthcare professionals is a complex issue and it requires operational strategic intervention. In their opinion, what is the challenge? Do they have a strategic plan in place? What is the impact of the plan on these challenges? And how effective is the skills development program specifically to recruit the right people? Thank you, Chair. I'm done. Chair.
Thank you so much. Colleagues, am I audible? Am I audible, colleagues?
You are.
Yes, sir. Can you hear you?
Can you hear you?
I am. Oh, I see. That's all right. Madam, I'll start with the minister if she could to make sense and then go to Dr. Nglovo and his team.
Hi. I can hear you. I think you answered. Let me just pose one question
that I think is urgent. Minister? Yes, are we together?
Chairperson, you are not audible. I think there's something wrong with your...
I think things too.
With your wife, I don't know. Because I could hear Honorable Bukas well, but I can't hear you. Just try again, Chair. I don't know about the others.
Yes, there's a lot of noise when you speak, so we can't hear.
Yes, Chair, you're not audible.
Okay.
Chairperson, the other possibility before you to switch off the video and let me
Mr. Peters, hello? You can't hear.
Chair?
Ms. Peters, can you run the meeting? I'm not audible. All right.
Okay. Are there any other
issues? Am I audible now? Am I audible?
Yeah. There's just a lot of noise at the background, Chair. Can you switch off the video, Chair? Yes.
Yes. Chair, switch off the video and then you'll be, I'm sure you'll be audible. Let's try that. Thank you, Honorable Baker.
Can we proceed, Honorable Members? Honorable Members?
Yes, Madam, yes. Honorable.
Yes. So, yes, Minister, you can proceed. Thank you.
With what, Chair? I didn't hear.
No, I don't think there are any other questions, so they can proceed to answer to respond to the questions, Chair, Minister. Your team.
Okay, Chair, what I wanted to say, which maybe I think was an error on my side, right from the beginning, I did say that the Surgeon General will not join us today and is not available and is therefore represented by the deputy. And I now realize that I should have gone beyond that. I'm sorry. The Surgeon General is not well. And that is why he is not here with us. He's not in a position at all to participate in even in a virtual for now. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I beg your pardon?
I don't know what is the noise at the background. There's someone. Kendall, please mute all the mics.
Can you hear me?
In the house, please mute all the mics of those people that are not on the floor.
Yes?
Yeah?
You can go ahead now.
Okay. Thank you, Minister, for that. Are there any other members who want to ask some questions? Honorable Member?
No, Chair. I wanted to answer two questions. That was the one of the apology of the Surgeon General. But the second one, Chair, which is a very important matter which I feel I need to respond to, is that of the ministerial task team which was established, right? And I do want to request the Deputy Surgeon General and his team to commit themselves to bringing that report to you and to discuss the report, to look at the observations, findings, and the recommendations, and look at which ones of the recommendations have been implemented, Chairperson. I think it's very important because it really had to do in the main with issues of the OSD and issues of committed overtime for doctors in particular. Now, the Chairperson, on members, I do want to make an appeal that on the matter of the, I hear the question raised by Honorable Murray on the utilization of the VVIP units, how often they are, and just to say that they are used when it is necessary for us to do so. But honestly, the question on the Deputy President's medical condition, I would like you to spare and really allow for the team not to respond to that question, because we all know that matters of health, or even your health, or even mine, are matters between a doctor, it's doctor-patient confidentiality. And I think their profession, as they are sitting there, would not allow them at all to talk about the medical condition of the Deputy President, whether it is improving or not. if the deputy president feels comfortable at some point to take into confidence parliament about his medical condition, he would be the one who offers to do so. And I do want to please request to you, Chairperson, Madam Buford, that the DSG should not put in that kind of position on this matter. Thank you very much, Chair. I fully agree with you. They can respond.
Yeah, I fully agree with you, Minister, because that is a private matter. We also want to take note of the officials that are not well, and we wish them well. So I will now give over to Dr. Nglova to respond to the questions.
Thank you very much, President Chair. I want to reassure Honorable Member Mare that the situation hasn't gone from bad to worse. The sense is stabilized and stabilizing, although it might be at a very low base, but it is stabilized. And if the Honorable Member is hearing the same thing again and again, it's only because we're dealing with the issues from 1 year to the next. Maybe we should have given you feedback in terms of how far we are in solving some of the issues, which I think next time we are required to come, that's what we'll do. We'll start from this presentation and say, this is what we have done since the last presentation. The other issue with regard to that, the same song, is that some of the issues, the solutions are not within the text. We have to rely on our outside agents for the solutions. So, equally as important, we hope that by raising them to the portfolio committee, the portfolio committee will take it up and go to the relevant structures of parliament to make sure that the requirements that we have are provided so that we can fix up the issue. So as long as some issues are not solved because the constraints are outside us, we'll keep on repeating them so that hopefully the portfolio committee will be able to do something about them. With regard to our COVID preparedness in terms of the four medical hospitals, it was an expansion of the capabilities in the three military hospitals and also Bluff, not four new hospitals or four field hospitals. And then that program is still ongoing, and feedback will be provided as the program continues. Short to say that at this stage, as far as COVID-19, we are combat ready to an acceptable level to deal with the situation, and also to assist the National Department of Health. I will move over to the issue of retaining specialists. As it was alluded to, it's a very complex issue. Starting from the basis that
not everybody can be a doctor within a military environment. That's the starting point. Person to be a good specialist, a good whatever, but as soon as they find themselves within the military environment, then they have a problem. I usually make this joke within our forum and say that for a person, a doctor, a professional, who after 1994, when there was freedom for everybody to do what you want to do, and you decide you want to go to the most undemocratic structure, which is the South African National Defense Force, it means there's something wrong in your head. So that I still stand by. Some people don't find the military way of doing things as what they want. The second aspect is that, is the aspect that has been alluded to in terms of the deterioration of our capabilities and everything. But the other part of it is that there's a natural tendency within the South African environment of people moving from one area to another, which is not only in the military, but it's throughout all professions. Unless if there's something over and above that gives a specific domain a competitive advantage over others. As we are speaking today, the military doesn't have anything that gives it competitive advantage over others, over the Department of Health, over the private sector. But it has a lot of push factors that push people outside of the military. So it's a very, very, very complex and complicated problem. We are part of the community service system of national health. We get allocated community service doctors as required and as available by the Department of National Health. We don't run a separate system. So we cannot, for example, because even the posts, the number of posts in our hospitals are determined by the Department of National Health for community services. Now the critical issue of the affordability of the three military hospitals, that's a very, very interesting and important question. Even before you go into it, the utilization. Because you can start from the basis of saying that the military needs to have its own hospitals. That the military needs to have its own military health service. If the military needs its own military health service that goes with soldiers to war, how far back do we go in terms of creating the capabilities? If you say that now we only have the military health services in bases but no hospitals. I mean it's not an issue that must be resolved by the SAM. It's an issue that must be resolved at the national level. But what can be said is that the hospitals are utilized and they might not be, as we are speaking, utilized to 120%, but what might happen is that when there's a day and a time that they are needed and they are not there, then we are going to be in trouble. They also form the basis of our support to national health. For example, when there's a strike in a in Kimber or in Mahikeng. The people that we send there to go and man the hospitals are people from the hospitals. So it's a question of a decision being taken at the national level. Whether we can afford them, we can afford them. We can afford them from the perspective of the staff. From our side, we just have to make sure that we run them a little bit more efficiently. And then with the additional input of capital to make them function more effectively. Not all our solutions are based on getting more money. Although we haven't done the comparative study as to how much of what solutions we have are based on us doing things that are non-cost driven or are based on money, we think most of the things that can be done without investment. But for us to reach that level of world-class mental health excellence, there is a need for a capital injection. Now for services and the seed base, we are also constrained by the same thing. That is purely an issue of the budget. Because to go and establish another facility somewhere in a rural area, it means we have to look at the personnel, all the things that goes with that one. And at this stage, we are not in a position to do that. But how do we try to fix up that issue? To try and introduce a managed healthcare system that is going to make sure that we control the process of buying services from the public service or the private service. I think I've answered those questions to the best. If I've missed something, my colleagues will add. In terms of Honorable Mosenya, I think when I was dealing with the issue of the attraction of healthcare professionals, I only to emphasize one thing. The salary structure of a doctor in the sense is exactly the same as the salary structure of a doctor in a provincial hospital. There is no difference at all. The only advantage that we have is that I don't have to worry about what I wear every morning because I get given uniform. That is the only thing that is differentiates me from people in the Department of Health. The imbalance I admit we have to do something about the imbalance in service provision between rural and urban area, but it comes to the same issue of do we have the capital to expand our footprint. At this stage, we don't have the capital. Expanding our footprint is one option. Managing how our patients access services where we are not available is the other option. Now, when we talk about 75% or 74% of our budget going to HR. I just need to clarify a point that in the sense, the HR is actually the service. we do for the military community. They are no different from what is done by the Department of National Health, and all our programs are aligned with the Department of National Health programs. Almost all of our policies and our plans to deal with population health improvement is just an adaptation of national health programs to our own environment. So we implement exactly the same, so there's no variation. I think I was misunderstood when I talked about the issue of quality. When I said we cannot be sure of quality, we're talking about a specific situation where in a rural areas or in other environments where we send our patients out to somebody to look after our patients. For example, if we're here in Pretoria, somebody needs something somewhere else, we say, okay, go to that doctor. We might have put the criteria to choose doctors in the various areas and say this one is appropriate, that one is appropriate, or it's not appropriate. But once the patient is there, we're not there to see what has happened. And the complaint mechanism from that doctor to us is not optimal. I think the issue of where we might need to put satellite services or satellite hospitals has also been dealt with in terms of the question that are dealt with of imbalance of services and the availability of services in the sick base. Minister, we commit ourselves to make the MTT report available. And in the format of saying, this is what was said, this is what has been done. And then we submit it as soon as possible to the portfolio committee. If I've missed something, please remind me. Thank you very much. I have missed.
Thank you, Chair. Are you back? Honorable Kaba?
Am I audible now?
Yes, you are.
Am I audible?
Yes, Chair, you are. Chair, Honorable Kaba, thank you, Dr. Mglobo, for that. Honorable Members,
thank you so much, colleagues. Thank you very much, Ms. Vivis, for yes, continue.
What happened to the channel?
Chairperson, I think you should continue. Chair seems to be having a problem with the network. So one of the producers, maybe you should just continue with the listening.
Thank you, Minister. Honorable members,
we are also getting cut off.
Honorable Minister.
Yes, Chair.
You want to add something before we close?
No, just to say, Minister, I'm happy that Major General Ndlovu did respond to the matter which was raised by Honorable Murray on whether, in fact, we shouldn't do away with military hospitals. And I think that question sort of took me completely by surprise, because if anything, here in this portfolio committee, we have talked about the fact that we have provinces which have big numbers of soldiers, bases, which provinces actually need their own hospitals. You recall, Chair, that in one of the briefings to you, I did say that my wish during this COVID-19 period would be for us to have a legacy project. Either we build a hospital in KZN, Limpopo, or Eastern Cape, where you have many bases. In fact, I think the place which has more bases, which has more soldiers, is in Limpopo. I said I wish if we had a way that out of the money which has been allocated for COVID, defense in a year's time or 2 years' time will have something to show and say, this is what we were able to do during COVID-19. This is our legacy project. So what that talks to is that all of us have always seen the need to create or build hospitals in those areas where we do not have military hospitals. I am, and I should say this lately, and hopefully one will not be let down, but there's nothing wrong in dreaming, Jefferson. I've expressed that to the Military Command Council. I've not just expressed that to the Military Command Council. I then received some feedback about possibilities of doing something in the area of Limpopo. But when we are ready with that report, we will come back to you and say, definitely it seems there is something which we can get out of Limpopo, including sharing a hospital with between whoever or DOH and the Department of Defense. Honorable Chair, honorable members, I am very concerned about the fact that we have people on the borderline in that area, so in the north. You have people on the borderline who are deployed there. You have bases there. You have Oldspruit. You have Makado. And if you look at the distance, for instance, between the Oldspruit, which is a training institution for the Air Force, you look at the distance between that and the nearest hospital. It's almost 170 kilometers. And if something therefore were to happen there, there would be a it would be a tragedy. So I'm just saying my wish or my dream is for us, I still haven't given up, I'm still following up on the matters with the Chief of the South African National Defense Force, that by end of this period, by the time all of us say we post-COVID, that the Defense Force we'll have something, hopefully, to show that this is our legacy project. This is what we were able to do and achieve during the COVID-19 period, in spite of the depression it has brought in the country. Thank you very much, Jefferson. Thank you, Honorable Minister.
Thank you, Minister. Deputy Minister, you want to add something? Is the Deputy Minister still in?
Chairperson, thank you. There are points which I think are of, for me, strategic importance that were raised in today's presentation. which I think arms community members to bring into perspectives of our plans going forward. The point about the insourcing versus outsourcing, which has been raised, I think it's a matter we must come back to and have better clarity of what the funds itself is saying, because from their presentation, it would appear that they are still thinking through the issues themselves. They actually are not, conclusive about what is the best solution to the problem we have of providing health services adequately and efficiently to the entire community. And it will also be from where I sit, it would also be useful that they must also provide information what the situation was prior to 1994 in relation to this matter of insourcing and outsourcing. Because at the time, the community in this country was more than, the infrastructure nonetheless is what we still have today. How that was handled. That is the one issue which I feel it's a matter which the committee is sensitized about. The other matter, of course, what the presentation canvassed, but I observed that the SAMHSA leadership at the end of the presentation, they maybe not consciously went back what they thought they were saying that we must consider going forward, which is that they are raising a point about the need to have a capacity is what can be referred to as a national humanitarian crisis reserves, and it's a matter which they are saying that they want to lobby the National Disaster Coordinating Center to consider looking at, because this COVID-19 experience tells us that disaster management with health in the future, it's likely to return to revisit us, and it must find us better than where we are today. But at the end, in relation to the capacity that SAMHSA must develop future challenges, they seem to revert to the traditional challenges of, the kind of things that SAMHSA has been doing as an organization. And in my view, they must be bold enough to actually, scope this challenge properly, because I believe properly handled, it actually points to some of the things that our defense review must actually consider, which is, in broadly speaking, where we place national disaster management as government and how it can best be handled going forward. I think that matter has been brought up, and I'm happy they have raised it, it's something that we must keep in mind for our discussions of the defense review as we go forward. Otherwise, I'm also happy with the information shared. It was quite rigorous. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Honorable Kaba? Chair?
Yes, okay. Ms. Bikosta, am I okay now?
Yeah, you are.
Okay, colleagues. Thank you very much. But I was able to rejoin and follow the discussion so that you couldn't, I was not audible. Colleagues, I think we have come to the end of the discussion today. And let me thank the minister, thank the deputy minister, and Dr. Ndlovu and the team for the frank discussion we have had today. I will certainly make another opportunity for us to look at the budget and the repairs and the maintenance side of things. And it's unfortunate that we could not have the chief of NOC today to take us through the ramp repairs and maintenance programs. Fine, we'll arrange another time. And there is a request, Minister, that for the task team, for the report of the task team, I that has been repeated. I hope I would also try to find time to receive the briefing from whoever that the minister will task to come and brief us on the report of the task team. And because it's in the space that we are in as we are discussing these matters, I think I would love us to leave it at that for now, because we'll have another opportunity. Minister, do you still want to say something before we close?
No, Chairperson, thank you very much.
No, thank you.
We'll definitely make the MTT report available, and I will request the generals to make sure that there's a spreadsheet which shows what the findings were, what the recommendations made were, and what it is that has been done and that which has not been done. And when they present that report, they will be joined by people from HR. Thank you very much.
Yes. No. Thanks, Minister. What makes me happy about the presentation is that the department has been able to identify the challenges and have also developed to those challenges, which in a way really takes us to another level. We are not where you were last year or in the previous year. We seem to be moving forward. I think we thank you for that. With that, colleagues, let me thank all of you and then say the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much, colleagues.
I'm the
CEO.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you, colleagues.
Bye-bye.
General Ndlovu. General Ndlovu. Will you please call me?